Hey, good evening, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Let's Talk About It. This is Susan Johnson, and I'm here with my co-host, Dennis O'Brien, and have we got a fabulous guest for you this evening, right, Dennis?
Yes, we do.
Yeah, so we have Susan Hunter, who is the executive director for a year now at the Windham Area Interfaith Ministry. And also, we had this week, just a day or so ago, the celebration of Windham Area Interfaith Ministry's 40th anniversary. Welcome to the show, Susan.
Thank you so much for having me on. I wish I could be there in person, but I injured my ankle, so phone will have to do this time.
Well, the phone is great. We've been using both, and we found that having people call in gives us access to more people, because sometimes people just can't make it. They're too far away or whatever. And we started doing this during COVID, and it was a great addition to being able to get the show done. So we're thrilled that you're able to join us, and we're absolutely thrilled that you took on the responsibility of such an amazing agency. Windham Area Interfaith Program here in town does so many different things. And you know that it's there doing those things, but when you see it all at once, it's quite an amazing place.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I think until I started there, I didn't have a true understanding of the scope of everything that we did. The Material Goods Program has been around since the inception. And as you'd mentioned, we're celebrating, this is our 40th year in existence. It started in 1984. It is when the Articles of Incorporation were filed at the state of Connecticut. And the Material Goods Program back then was known as the Clothes Closet and the Furniture Bank, were one of the very first programs. And that's what a lot of people know us for, is that we take donations of furniture, clothing, small appliances, large appliances, bicycles, durable medical equipment, you know, sheets, pillows, you name it. And it is given free of charge to the people who need it. And it's such a beautiful thing, because a lot of people now, I mean, people I think have always struggled through the years, depending on the circumstance and the situation, but now it just seems like a lot, like there are a lot more people that are not able to afford the basic needs in the places that they live. So they can come in and get things that they need for free and use their financial resources for other things like food, rent, utilities, that sort of thing.
Yeah, and you also help with a lot of other things like that as well. So just a little bit that we'll talk about later on, but also you help with energy assistance as well, and we do the Walk for Warmth every year. So that's coming up pretty soon, and that's another thing that Windham Area Interfaith Ministry does. And I love the celebration that all the different religions get together and support each other and the people who have the needs for help and assistance. And it's just it's a wonderful feeling to see people with different ideas getting together and working together for a better society.
Yeah, and I'm really glad you mentioned the Walk for Warmth. That is always the Sunday before Thanksgiving. So Thanksgiving is a little late this year. It's going to be November 24th. And in addition to walking and raising money for our Emergency Financial Assistance Fund, which does help with fuel, utilities, rent, and other unmet basic needs, we have an interfaith Thanksgiving service during registration. And when I went last year, I took a picture of it and posted it on my Facebook page. Reverend Debbie Pallotta, who's my board chair, was speaking. It was at B'nai Israel. So there was the beautiful, Jewish lettering in the background, the Hebrew lettering in the background. And in front of me, there was a gentleman with a yarmulke and a Muslim gentleman sitting next to each other, listening to her speak. And to me, that one picture captured just the beauty of when we just look at our commonalities, work toward a common cause. Like, this is really the world that we're striving to live in. And Wayne really encompasses that. Like, it really is a whole different group of religions, people from different areas, people from different cultures that volunteer and work and support us. And it's really a pretty cool place.
It really is. Dennis?
Yeah, I wanted to get in and say a little bit about the history of WAME, going all the way back to the beginning. I don't know how the churches all got together and formed WAME, but I happen to be the managing attorney at the local legal aid office, Connecticut Legal Services. I also was involved in a lot of litigation statewide, but one of the responsibilities I had was to represent our legal aid office in a group that was called the Community Assistance Network, CAN, C-A-N. I don't think it's still in existence.
Yes, it is.
If it is?
Yes.
Under that name?
Eastern Connecticut, CAN. I actually have a meeting next week with them in Norwich on homelessness.
Well, I'm now I'm so well informed. I lost track of that because I left legal services in the '90s, mid-'90s, and went on to different things, including probate court, the town council, whatever. But going back to then, that was, of course, in 1984, and that was just about, well, I think we were there was an election going on then, too. The second, that's when Ronald Reagan was elected to his second term as president. And the 80s were pretty tough for low-income people. Started to get really tough, worse than ever, I think, in my memory. And all of the helping agencies in town, helping groups, got together and formed a community assistance network. And where did we meet? We met at WAME, mm-hmm. which is down on Maple Avenue. And Susan and I were, at the time, were living on Bolivia Street, which, you know, at the bottom of the, which is, you know, at the bottom of Bolivia Street is Maple Avenue. I think the building that Wayne was in at that time is no longer there. Is that right, Susan?
Mm-hmm. It was part of the Catholic Church, so I think the building's still there.
Okay.
My recollection is because one of my very good friends at the time was one of the first volunteers there.
I thought it was a park. I thought it became a parking lot, but I don't know. But anyway, Wayne was there for a few years, and we used to have our CAN meetings there of all the agencies in town. And as you said, Susan, Wayne was known for collecting goods, furniture and whatnot, and distributing it, clothing, and distributing it to local people in need. And as you know, our friend Susan's friend was working there, and I wish I could remember the name of the original executive director because I knew her, but I can't right now. Maybe it'll come to me.
She was also a member of the Rotary Club, and I was in the Rotary Club about a year or two after that.
That's the
very beginning. Yeah.
Okay. Joyce Segal.
That's right. You got it.
Yep.
Joyce Segal, and then there was somebody else that took over from Joyce, or was. Somebody else used to attend our CAN meetings. It wasn't mm-hmm. Joyce, but you're right. Joyce Segal was the original executive director. And I think our good friend Howard Schiller, attorney Howard Schiller, who was a member of the temple over on Jackson Street, was, I think, the attorney who did volunteer work for the group, for Wayne, because I can remember going to the 20th anniversary mm-hmm. and the 30th anniversary, and I remember Howard being there.
Yes.
And unfortunately, I wasn't able to get to the 40th anniversary this week, but I was well represented by my state representative, Susan Johnson.
And your state senator, Mae Flexer.
Yes. That's right. And I noticed, I don't know if you saw today's Chronicle, Susan.
I did.
Oh, nice picture of you. And you're, I guess, the chairman of your board?
Oh, it's the Northeast Chamber.
Oh, Northeast Chamber chair. Yeah. A nice picture of you on the front page of the Chronicle and a wonderful article about Wayne. And I'm so happy. I was so happy to see that as I ran out the door today to get to the show, because Wayne has been an institution in our town for such a long time. I can remember Virginia Fulton was the mm-hmm. executive director. And then, of course, Victoria Nemirovsky for many years,
yes.
did a marvelous job. And then, I don't know whether it was during her tour of duty, I think it was when the building that you're in now, and have been in for many years now, was donated by the
Dan
guy
Gordon.
Who went, Surplus Center, yeah.
Yep,
yeah.
Dan Gordon.
That's a fabulous building, and it's beautifully located, centrally located, and it's a great place from which Wayne can do all the good works that you do. I was pleased to see all the towns that you cover. Of course, churches from those towns are involved, I'm sure, listed
yes.
in your in the article right at the end. And I counted, I think, 12.
Yes.
Plus, I think they counted Wyndham twice. They they counted Willimantic, and they also counted stores in Massive. But there's 12 towns, mm-hmm. and that is wonderful. I've worked in a lot of those towns, and there's so many caring people, and they all seem to come together at WAME. And you, when you became the executive director, I know you were on the town council for a while. I was really pleased that they were able to get you to be the executive director, because you did a wonderful job. Well, you did a wonderful job at Generations when you were there. That's when I first met you.
Yes.
And then at on the town council of the town of Windham, you were there and did a great job. And we're just very happy that you're in that position.
Thank you very much. I really enjoy leading the organization, because it's like I don't feel like there's much that I have to do, because besides myself, there are six other paid staff, and only one other person is full-time, so it's all part-time staff, and it really is run on the passion and the power of our volunteers and our community partners and our supporting faith organizations. And I don't know, I mean, I was writing a grant, and it was to partially fund our volunteer coordinator. And what I did is I quantified, like, if we had to pay every volunteer to show up every week, to open our doors, to for shopping, to help people get the things that they need, or help them with, you know, the fuel assistance or rental assistance. Like, I'm trying to remember the dollar amount, but it was hundreds of thousands of dollars that I would have to pay people if we didn't have volunteers. And that is just so amazing to me that we can do what we do with them.
It is amazing, and it's, you know, a show of what a great area this is to be in. Excuse me. And there's so many caring people in this area, and we've been able to tap into that sense of community, which I think we're really working hard to get it together even more so. And WAM is just another example of how we are a great community that does take care of the people here and in this area. And I don't think you find this kind of commitment and sense of community in a lot of places now in the state or in the country.
No, I agree. And it's interesting, because someone asked me yesterday what it is, because I live in Willimantic. I only live three blocks away from WAME. So I get to serve my community in a very special way by being at WAME. And someone asked me yesterday, what is it about Willimantic? So I didn't grow up here. I actually grew up in Newington. Dennis and I have had several conversations, because he has ties to New Britain.
Well, let me tell you about New Britain now. No, I'm going to skip right, that
no,
for
no.
today.
We're going to let Susan speak. Go
I'm
going
to let Susan speak.
Which Susan? No, just
That's
kidding.
Another show, Dennis.
Yeah, we'll have to do that.
We will. So I moved to the area in 1999. I bought a house with my husband at the time in Hampton. So I lived in Hampton for 20 years, but I started working in Willimantic in 2009, back when Community Prevention and Addiction Services was its own entity. And CPAS, people knew it as CPAS. And then it merged with CHR in 2010. But that's when I started working in Willimantic. But even before that, gosh, I think in 2005, Hampton and Chaplin wanted to form a community emergency response team. And that was the certs were a thing back then. And so I was in Willimantic doing the training, and the training was led by NECOG. It was WNCOG back then. That's how long ago it was. And that's how I met Dagmar Noel. Everybody knows Dagmar, and Mark Scrivener, who's the fire chief. And by becoming friendly with them, I kind of got drawn into, like, the really cool things that people do here in Windham and Willimantic, volunteering, getting involved in the community. And that just, I was so attracted by that. So when I got the opportunity to work in Willimantic, I was thrilled. And then I went to Generations, and I was there as their director of finance for 10 years. And again, it allowed me to work in the community and get involved, like everything from, I would volunteer pretty much for anything, like any event that needed volunteering, the Hop Fest or Third Thursdays, all of that, because it just, I did the trash mob back when it was pretty active, and you know, we'd meet every other Friday and pick up garbage in an area for a half hour. It just, people were so motivated to help uplift the community and uplift the area. I'd never seen that anywhere else that I had lived. So in 2019, I actually moved into Willimantic, and I have my dream older Victorian, but I just love being enmeshed in this community. I feel more connected here than I do in Newington, and that's where I grew up. So it's just a thrill for me to be able to serve in the community that I live and to help my neighbors and our neighbors in our surrounding towns. It's just really very special to me to do that.
Well, that's very interesting, because it brings to mind the fact that you have such great experience in Generations, which is regional, and now this, which is regional, and also helping people with the addiction issues, that's regional. So you have been not just here, but all throughout this region. And, you know, the other thing about this region is it has the two universities and the community college. And it has a vo-tech school. We have a lot of educational facilities around here, which I think also helps give a sense of community, because people who work in those areas or they go to school, they feel connected to this area. This is where they got their education. This is where they or where they work. And it really opens up a lot of information here that you may not get in other places that don't have access to this kind of a network.
Yeah, and the universities are just, they're so good to us. And we have such great connections with a lot of the professors and the students. We have groups from ECSU and UConn that come in and volunteer. They'll do projects on Saturdays. We actually have, there's one young lady from UConn, Sydney. She's amazing. She has volunteered with us for years. I think she's a junior or senior this year. I don't remember exactly. But she's pretty much volunteered in every single department in Wayne. Like on the dock, she's done intake. She's worked in the pantry. And she, so during COVID, UConn used to do this grab-and-go event where students who were moving out could just leave the things that they didn't want to take in a central area rather than throw them out. And then they would be donated in, you know, to different organizations throughout the area. And obviously that stopped due to COVID. And Sydney sees the need and sees the amount of people that come in looking for items and seeking our help, that she and another group of students resurrected grab-and-go this past year. And we went up with our Wayne truck and we absolutely stuffed the truck. I have a volunteer, Brady, who like could kind of, you know, fit all the things into the truck to the very roof. And we still didn't get everything they had for us. And UConn ended up sending down two more vans worth of stuff. And so it's a win-win-win, because you have students understanding that while they may be in a position where they can leave items at the end of the semester, not everybody is in that position. There are a lot of people in need. And, you know, we get the benefit of getting relatively new items and being able to give them out to the people who need them. It's just such a wonderful partnership. And we've actually been in talks. I'm going to start talks with Eastern. There's Professor Simon actually brought his class, and he's teaching a class called The Community, where he brings his students to different organizations within Willimantic so they can understand the community that their college exists in and that they live in. And they're going to the firehouse and the police station. They've been to the No Free Shelter, and they came to Wayne. And out of that came this conversation like, hey, we should meet and figure out how to do this with Eastern as well, because they have the same issue where students are just leaving things behind or throwing them out. And they could all benefit the community and be donated to us.
That is great. That is wonderful. That's another way for our universities to connect with the communities that they're in. And UConn especially is in kind of a different spot, because not many are in a more agricultural rural area when you look at universities and their locations. And Eastern, too, is kind of, well, Connecticut's kind of split in half when it comes to transportation, and this part of the state has a lot of agricultural aspects and more space than, say, the western part of the state or the, you know, southern part of the state. It is very, very different. But on the other hand, you've got more room, and things people have a chance to have a better sense of community and closeness that you don't necessarily get with a larger place.
Yeah, I know sometimes people are just like, oh, the students, because, you know, sometimes they have parties. And I live next door to a Victorian that's rented to students, and they're lovely, and they're very respectful. But I can understand how some people have that perception. But there's such a wealthy resource. Like, they're eager to learn, and they're very talented. And, thankfully for the Center for Community Engagement at Eastern, and UConn has a similar department. They're really good at getting the students out and engaging in organizations. And I think the town might have had some interns from Eastern.
Yes.
So they're really, really good at connecting the students and getting them to be able to use their talents and what they're learning in school in the real world. So, for instance, we're working with Eastern on Walk for Warmth. Lana O'Connor is our Eastern connection with that. And there's a student, Brianna Duffy, who is in, graphics and art is her major. So she's designing all of her Walk for Warmth, the signs, and it's a beautiful way for her to utilize what she's learning, to learn what it's like to work with a customer and get feedback and refine. And it's like a win-win for everybody. It's just really a great relationship.
That's wonderful. It's going to be one of those big efforts that you have to come up with, in November to make sure we get a good turnout for the Walk for Warmth, because that is that's a great event, and it's wonderful to get people from all over the region for that. I would like to go on a little bit into some of the things that people can do if they haven't donated any furniture or clothing. Tell us a little bit about how to go about doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. So we accept gently used items, new items, of course, as well. So, like, if you wouldn't wear it or have it in your home if it's broken, then we end up having to pay to bring it to the dump. So, but we do take clothing, shoes, smaller items like kitchen utensils, pots, pans, sheets, pillows, even diapers. Those can be dropped off at our dock, which is on Riverside Drive in the back, from Tuesday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to noon. For the larger items, some people have big pieces of furniture, and it's very difficult for them to bring them to us. So we do have a truck, which we just had a new truck donated by David Foster. Thank you, such an angel. We weren't sure what we were going to do without a truck, and he came through for us again.
He's amazing. Thank you, David, for everything.
Absolutely. And it's bigger than the last truck, which is even better.
It is a good sized truck. We were there for the dedication, me and Senator Flexer and the Mayor Tom DeVivo. We were all there, but we have to give a special thank you to David Foster for all the good things that he does for this area.
Yeah, he's amazing. And with this new truck and the bigger truck, what we'll do is we'll schedule pickups. So we'll go out to donors' homes. And Nina Schaefer, everybody knows Nina. I think she's worked, when I look back at the history, I think she's worked for us for 30 years, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But she'll schedule pickups with donors, and we have a driver, Christian Rivera, and my volunteer, Brady Timmons, will go out in the truck, and they'll go to people's homes, and they'll pick the furniture up, and they'll bring them back. And the truck is beautiful. We don't have a lift for it. We had a hydraulic lift on our old one, which saves the backs of Christian and Brady and our other volunteers that work on the truck. So we're fundraising for a lift, too. So now we're just restricted to two pickups a morning because three's a little aggressive without having the lift. But if people call, I'm trying to remember a phone number and I'm drawing a blank, but if they call WAME, our website's wamect.org, and call Nina Extension 104, she can get you scheduled in for a pickup. We're usually scheduling a week or two out, so it may not be immediate, and that's a really good way for us to be able to help you get these large pieces of furniture, couches, even appliances. We've had people donate washer dryers, stoves, refrigerators. People need all of that. A really good example is we had a woman call. She's a single mom of three, had no way to get to us, and her refrigerator died, so she has formula stored in it and food for her kids. And we happened to have a refrigerator. and we don't normally deliver, but in her case, we made an exception, we're able to bring the refrigerator out to her so she didn't lose all of her food, because that would have been very difficult for her to try to replace, given, you know, that she's a single mom and she's trying to make ends meet as it is. So stuff like that's very much welcomed.
Oh, yes, that's an excellent thing to be able to get.
You know, I mentioned before some of the great executive directors of WAME that preceded you and you know, built the organization up, and you've taken it even farther and higher and greater, but in just 1 year. But I wanted to mention one guy who was sort of like an all-star in the history of WAME, and that would be Ed Austin.
Yes.
I don't know. I didn't know whether you knew who Ed Austin was, and I don't know where he is or if he's still around. But he was an angel. He was a saint. He would do anything to help people. And I sat at so many meetings with him, and he'd drive his truck around and pick up stuff. And, mm-hmm. you know, when WAME was in different locations, in addition to, I think, the current location, but he set the tone for that, and you know, he I don't know, his portrait should be on the wall somewhere,
yeah,
along with some of the others I named. But the Hall of Fame, and this is an organization, by the way, that's worthy of a Hall of Fame, because people who have worked there, and I've forgotten some of the names, but they might come to me, but and done such a marvelous job, really deserve the kind of recognition that people who do so much for so many in need can do. I also noticed in your when I was looking over your fabulous website, it's very good. It's a lot in there about your different programs and all the different things you do, which is way beyond what, you know, what WAME was doing at the outset, as you mentioned, although they were doing a lot of great things for people even back then. Randy Radowski. I ran into him years ago, and he's a really nice guy. I haven't seen him in a long time. I didn't know where he was, but now I see he's your dock manager.
Yes.
Yeah, he manages the dock back there. You know, we're very familiar with that area, because when we worked for Legal Aid, I used to park my car back there right on that road and, you know, go right up the stairs in the building that was, well, it's now the Capitol Theater.
Yeah.
And then we moved to 872 Main Street, which is where, you know, some agencies still are. I guess WRCC is there, mm-hmm. among others. But we were, you know, very familiar with that area. And the YMCA, the back of the YMCA is there. It's a, you know, it was like a little village for people who were, you know, giving help to the community. And but WAME is definitely the leading force, as far as I can see, and I can't say enough about what a important role WAME plays in the community. That's why I was so delighted when you took the position of executive director when we lost Victoria Nemirowski, who was fabulous.
Yeah, Victoria is enjoying her retirement, traveling the world.
So she's yeah. I see
her Facebook posts, and she's smiling, and she's
yeah.
like, you know, here, there, and everywhere.
Yeah, I think, you know, actually, before Victoria went to WAME, I think she was doing a little traveling of the world then, too. But
yes.
I think that traveling sort of got slowed down a lot, if not suspended, when she was in all those years that she was doing her great job for WAME and setting a, you know, a great example for everybody who comes after, including yourself.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yep.
And with Ed Austin, there's thankfully a bulleted history up of at least the first 20 years of the organization. And one of the things I don't think a lot of people know about WAME is that we fundraise probably upwards of 85-90% of our operating funds, and then the funds for the emergency financial assistance. So we get a lot of small local foundation grants, but
yep.
we don't have state contracts. We don't have federal contracts. Like, this truly is a grassroots organization.
Oh, yeah.
And over the years, and I think actually Ed, if I remember correctly, was the one who started the Steeplechase bike tour.
I think so, yep. I remember that.
To help in a response to help WAME make up some shortfalls. And he's such a big proponent. He was such a big support over the years. The steeplechase was really Ed's baby. And there are people that do the SAG wagon support, which ride around and support the riders. And they still have signs on their cars, called, you know, with Ed's name on it. In honor. So he's been
well-deserved.
Well-deserved, absolutely. I mean, I don't know where Wayne would be without Ed, honestly.
He was a major player. And, you know, talking about the events you do, the Walk for Warmth came first. And I know Susan and I were still in legal age when that started. I can remember going on the first Walk for Warmth. And it started, I believe, at one of the schools. It was either the high school or there was another school over in that area. No, it had to be the high school. I'm pretty sure the first one started at the high school or, I don't think it was the middle school. The middle school wasn't built yet because it happened in the, I would say the Walk for Warmth started not long after Wayne started, probably in the 90s, maybe late 80s. I don't know if it's part of your your history.
And I'm trying to remember because I remember in the first Walk for Warmth, Nina was one of the volunteers to help organize it, and they ended up hiring her in the furniture bank because of her organization skills.
Yep.
So if it's been 30 years, so 1994 maybe?
Yeah, maybe, and I think Reverend Duval was a big part of it.
Yeah.
He used to be at the First Congregational Church on
Absolutely,
Valley Street.
Yep.
He was a major player in the Walk for Warmth when it started. I remember seeing him there, and he was running around and, you know, helping to organize things.
Yeah, and it's, you know, again, part of the reason why Wayne could be, has been so responsive to the needs of our community over the years is because it's grassroots support. And so we found that we're an organization of last resort when people have nowhere else to go, when, you know, other organizations run out of rental assistance or, or Operation Fuel just, you know, runs through their resources in 2 months. People come to us, and because we fundraise it, we can be flexible in the way we allocate, because sometimes rental assistance, and that seems to be the case lately, is really the thing that people come for. And what we do is we don't assist unless someone's behind in the rent, and it really is to prevent the eviction.
Sure. Vitally important.
Yeah, because once you get and you guys know your lawyers. Once you get eviction on your record,
we spent a lot of time preventing evictions back in the day.
Well, that's an excellent point. You know, once you are evicted, that sticks with you forever, and it makes it very, very hard for the person to be able to get another apartment, rent another place. So that is something that, you know, we really have to keep an eye on in the legislature and at legal services, because sometimes, and we have made some, tightened up some of the eviction situations. You can't evict somebody unless there's a reason for it, for example.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have made some changes, but it's in this day and age where people's incomes are not, you know, always there to pay the rent. It's a big deal to be able to save somebody from that trauma.
I used to have to make, you know, create the impression. I remember going around speaking, you know, like I'm sure you do now. I went around town a lot making speeches to organizations and talking to people. People couldn't understand why, you know, it was so important for us to do what we could to stop people from being evicted or even delay evictions until people could find alternative quarters. And, you know, I would say to them, well, you have a home, right? You have a home. You own your home. Well, this is their home. Imagine losing your home. I mean, losing a home is a terribly traumatic and dangerous thing, you know, and it's you know, something that, you know, Wayne does so much in the way of helping people. And I know we had back then when we had CAN, one of the things that we developed, I think Hannah Clements, our former first selectman, came up with the idea for a security deposit fund. So we were, in fact, she was doing that later on out of WRCC. They were providing security deposits for people who couldn't get them so that they couldn't rent an apartment. But anything to keep people in a home. And I'll tell you, the amount of homelessness we have today is much, much greater than it used to be. And the situation is very, very serious. And Susan and I are both appalled by it. And we're doing everything we can from our standpoints to try to work, you know, against homelessness. It's a real tough problem that when I first started in legal aid in 1972, it wasn't that big a problem.
Well, we had more housing, and we also had a better social safety net than we do now. It's been eroded by the Reagan administration, by the Bush administrations, and even Clinton, President Clinton eroded it. So I'm being very bipartisan here. But it's what's happened, and really a lot of things having to do with women and children. You might lose your husband, get a divorce, be in a situation where you have domestic violence. You know, these are things that cause people to lose their homes, and they have problems with trying to keep the rent up once these tragedies strike. And I don't think people really fully understand what causes these problems, but as a general rule, it's illness, accidents, all kinds of things like that create poverty.
And rents are more expensive now. They're much more expensive now than they were in the 70s when we started. Much more expensive.
And the actual rent payments and the idea for help that we used to have, the aid to families with dependent children, that Clinton changed into the temporary assistance for needy families, and that Roland made worse. I mean, we are a second worst social safety net in the country for women and children. So it is a really very bad situation here in this state for families.
Yeah, we only have a short time left, Susan, and I know you do an awful lot more than what we've talked about. Now, one of the things that struck me was the mentoring and the advice you give to people on all kinds of, problems and all kinds of tips that you give people about, dealing with life in the USA in 2024, which is not easy. It's wonderful if you're not poor and struggling, but if you're low income and needy, it's tough. So you're advising people and giving them a lot of mentoring and help too.
Yeah, and I'm really glad you mentioned it's the Partners in Independence Adult Mentoring Program, and it is so unique. I don't know of any other program like it, at least on this side of the state. And so Merle Paczynski oversees the PIP program, and we have trained volunteer mentors who have a wealth of life experience, knowledge, and skills, and they get partnered with what we call a learning partner. So a lot of these people, we see people come in needing emergency financial assistance, and a lot of times they can't see a way out of their situation, and but they have a willingness to change. And a lot of it's learned patterns of behavior, like maybe their parents lived paycheck to paycheck, or they just didn't have good tools in their toolbox to be able to move through life in a way that wasn't always in crisis. And so these people will get matched with one of our volunteer mentors, and it's an intensive program, but it really is coaching and mentoring, and the learning partner chooses their goals. And some of the relationships have spanned years. I think the longest is 8 or 9 years. And when this person first started working with their mentor, their goal was to buy a house, and they bought their house last year.
Wow, that's great.
Which is incredible.
Yes, it is. That's wonderful.
It's amazing. And so this is how we just don't want to stabilize people in their situation. We really want to truly help people to move out of poverty. And the best way to do that is to teach people and give them the tools in their toolbox so that they can just live a full life that they want to and not feel hampered by their situation or their past. Another woman wanted to change careers because she was in, just like the kind of minimum wage sort of jobs. So she worked with her mentor. She got a really good job. And then her mentor, she wanted to ask for a raise, was doing really well, had worked there for several years. So her mentor coached her on how to ask for a raise because she didn't know how to do that. She didn't know what to say. She was very afraid. And she successfully negotiated a higher salary, which is like super cool. So
that's amazing. We're running out of time, and I sometimes wonder how do these people make it? And now, just talking to you, I know that one reason people are making it in town and surviving is WAME. And I want to thank you so much for your hard work. Susan?
Yes, thank you, Susan Hunter. I appreciate you very much, and I appreciate the work that you do and all the volunteers and the workers at WAME. They do amazing work, and we really make the community what it is, a great, caring community. Thank you so much for being on the show with us today.
Thank you for having me on. It's always lovely talking to both of you.
Susan, there's so much more to talk about. We'll have to have you back real soon.
And, I love it.
Okay, it's time for us to go. We're getting the hook. I'm getting the hook from Rupar and Susan Johnson. And we're going to thank you, Susan Hunter. This is O'Brien with Susan Johnson and Matt Rupar. We'll be back next week with another great show. Thank you for listening.